This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. Jeff Bliss is Pacific Watch. Fires, wildfires. We'll start with the KNP complex fire in the Sequoia National Park. Any change, Jeff? We've been watching it hour to hour. I understand the weather might be changing.
The weather might be improving for the better for, you know, for the firefighters. We've had some moisture up and down the state, and even at some of the higher elevations, we've had our first snows up in Yosemite and such. And that certainly helps. It keeps the temperatures down, and that makes it easier not only to fight the fires, but it makes it less likely that fires are going to start. You eliminate some of that part of the equation for a fire for it to start. But we're nowhere near a good place yet with that fire. We have, you know, about 87, 88,000 acres have burned. We have almost 2,000 firefighters on that project. And it's only 20% contained. So we still have a long, long way to go with KNP.
And the Calder fire, the one that threatened the Tahoe Basin, is, and also the bears. Is there any fresh reporting on the bears?
No fresh reporting on the bears. I'm sure they're still out there looking for their free lunches. But the good news on that fire is we're at 98% contained. We expect that to be, you know, to close out shortly. It's made quite a bit of damage. We've been talking about, you know, 225,000 acres so far. And that's going to be having more damage on the Tahoe environment as the snow and rain comes. And then when the snows melt, we're going to see things like mudslides run off into this pristine Lake Tahoe. So there are more troubles to come with that fire, but the actual fire itself is nearing total containment.
Has the Dixie Fire reached 1 million acres yet?
Very close. We're about 965,000 acres. They expect containment probably around October 30th, so there's plenty more time, more room to burn in areas that are inaccessible, can only get it with air tankers. So, yeah, I think a million acres is probably going to be what the final number is when that's all said and done.
I don't know if the PG&E lines are the driver for these fires, but I know there's at least talk over these years that some of the PG&E lines have triggered large fires that caused a lot of damage and some deaths. The debate for a long time, I read in the San Francisco Chronicle, has been to put the lines underground. Are they going to do it?
They are going to do it. How quickly they'll do it and how extensively they'll do it is up for debate, or that's the big question. It's a very costly enterprise to try to take their, you know, their hundreds of thousands of miles of cable, of wiring and such, and to bury it. But the problem is it's becoming so costly for them in terms of damage and death and other, you know, litigation from these fires that are caused from their equipment, that they're really looking at it and saying, okay, the cost-benefit analysis here, the cost-risk analysis, we have to bury them. But it's going to be a very costly move for them.
I learned that PG&E is possibly shutting off power. Is this because of fire threat? Some counties.
So what happens is we're looking at some gusty winds coming up this week, and that may play a role in the other fires we talked about. But what they've learned over the past few years is they've had these massive fires they believe were sparked by PG&E equipment. Is that, you know, it's better for them to shut it down and to, you know, take the bad hit from the public in terms of brownouts and blackouts than it is to kill people, damage property, destroy, you know, natural resources, cost the state millions of dollars to put out fires. So they're just saying nowadays, heck, we're not even going to worry about all that. We're, you know, about all the reputation and people angry with us. We're going to shut it off and then and wait for the wind to die down. Then we'll turn it back on and we'll have avoided fires, hopefully.
The counties mentioned are Alameda, Contra Costa, and let me get all of them. You know these counties, I don't. Alameda, Contra Costa, Napa. Yeah, those three counties. That's all the north?
That is all. It's the east side of the bay moving around counterclockwise around the bay to the north. And those are all areas that have been hit by fires in the past few years. Particularly Napa got hit by some nasty fires that burned through the wine country there several years ago.
So PG&E is thinking about burying the wires. Now, what about the oil spill? I read one report that suggests that there are some beaches reopening. Is the oil spill at this point solved? Do we have any news? Because the ocean does move. It doesn't wait around for cleanup.
That's right. The in some places the slick has dissipated. They're still getting tar balls coming onto the beach, even if the slick dissipates near there, and that will keep the beaches closed. But farther to the south, they've opened a few of the beaches because they said it didn't hit us as bad as we thought it would, or look, we were doing it to, you know, as a caution, and we didn't need to do that. But still up near where the oil still originated, up off Huntington Beach and Newport Beach and down to Laguna Beach, you still have beach closures because of the threat to people's health from this tar, this oil that's still coming ashore.
Homeless, Caltrans pausing cleanup. What does this mean, Jeff?
It means they've been getting a lot of pressure from different advocacy groups, mental health groups, the homeless folks, saying you just can't clear people out. And they actually go to court from time to time saying you can't move people's things, their belongings. That's all they have. That's their home. But they argue that against the fact that these are taking place. These encampments occur in public, you know, right-of-way areas, highways, freeways, walkways. And it gets to be a point where some of these spill out onto the roads, or the trash does, or the fires do from these encampments, and cause a lot of problems both for commuters and for the workers. So they started clearing out some of these encampments, and they've gotten pushback. And now they're saying, okay, you know what, let's figure this out first before you send us back in there. Because they're really, you know, Caltrans, who handles the highways in California, they kind of get pulled back and forth by the advocates and the courts, and on the other side by the regular citizens and the politicians who say, you know, let's get them out of there. And the advocates say, no, let them stay there. It's a mess that doesn't seem to go anywhere.
As we learned in, I believe it was Seattle some years ago, the homeless industrial complex at work. Finally, a positive story, I think. Now, you are Yodeler Bliss and Engineer Bliss. You're a veteran of working at Disneyland. I see now that Disneyland has a series of offers where you can pay to cut in line. I don't know whether that's fun or not, but this is new at Disneyland, or I think there have always been things like this at Disney World in Florida.
This is new at Disneyland. You know, they over the past few years, they've really started to grab hold of the idea of premiums, that you could buy, you know, certain additions or upgrades. And people respond to that very favorably. Either if you're a tourist coming from out of town, you want to try to get the full experience, or if you're a local, you don't want to stand in line and put up with the tourists. So people are willing to pay the money. It's always a question of what's the tipping point. So far, no, they haven't been able to reach it, because every time Disney ups the price, people gladly pay it. Every time they add on new additions, new upgrades, people buy them. This is a sign that, number one, that, you know, Disney continues to be a premium experience both for tourists and locals, and people are willing to pay a huge amount of money. You know, just to get into the park for one day is over $100. That's just to get in. That doesn't include your food or any other upgrades. It's a costly adventure when you're taking a family of four or six. Boy, you're talking about a second mortgage.
Now, Jeff, do you recall in your Yodeler days, did people cut in line? Was that a problem for you manning the Alpine rides?
People absolutely did try to cut in lines. Usually, you know, kids, and we'd either throw them in the back of the line again, make them start all over, or actually if they were, you know, mean-spirited, egregious, or whatever, we would actually kick them out of the park. But really what this is about is giving people the opportunity to give Disney more money for an extra kind of privilege in the park. It's not really an effort to try to stem any type of line hopping or cheating or anything. It's a way to buy yourself a VIP experience, so to speak.
Jeff Bliss is Pacific Watch. This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.